Today's episode of Daily DVR dives into Veronica Mars is sponsored by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Go to Cufflinks.com now and use code DVR20 to save 20% off your order, no minimum. That's right, the whole shebang, baby. DVR20, use it. You need a belt, you need cufflinks, you need ties, you need like a pocket square. Come on, look good. Elevate your style when you walk out the door in the morning. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today. They have everything you need, and they got a great blog over there too that'll help you if you have an event coming up. So go over to cufflinks.com/DVR today. Welcome back to Daily DVR Does Veronica Mars. My name is Axel. My co-host, of course, is Ken. And you can find out more about us at DVRpodcast.com. Consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/DVR and send an email to DVRpodcast@gmail.com. Today, we'll be talking about Veronica Mars Season 4, Episode 4. We've already covered all the other three episodes plus the other three seasons. Go back and check it out. Let's just get right on into it. How you doing, Ken?
We are midway through the season, and I'm both excited and a little sad that it's halfway over. There's no pleasing me, though.
No, so. No. Well, I have to say, I was very... This episode, to me, was one of my favorite episodes. I told you I watched it like three times.
You loved it.
Yeah, maybe I have too many notes. I don't know why. It was just, there were a lot of things that happened, and I think I have to say it was Leo. I love Leo. I've been loving Logan.
You love Leo. Oh my God. I love him so much.
I do. I love this actor. I think that he is a fantastic actor, and he was in some independent films I saw a long time ago, and I took notice of him. I said, wow, what a great actor. Then he rose to prominence playing Schmidt on New Girl, right? And he does this whole routine, and it just turned into like an almost Urkel-like character by the end of that show. And then he went on to, I think, like a CBS show where he plays a kind of similar caricature, but to see him in this role where he's funny but real, he got the little accent going, you know, like I love it, because I don't know why, just sometimes worlds collide and a show you love and an actor you love are together, and then you're like, wow, finally we're getting more Leo. And I also think that he and Veronica are great together.
Don't get anywhere near my Logan Veronica territory. I feel very protective of them.
Well, I'm getting into it too, and I'll put it to you this way: I'm not anti Logan any longer. I think he's changed, and the character's changed, and I like what I see.
Yeah.
But I still don't think Veronica and Logan work. I don't know that they're healthy for each other.
Well, I wonder if Leo reminds you of like guys you grew up with. Like, you know, his last name's D'Amato. So maybe he's like an Italian guy from Jersey.
Well, you know what? That's not far off. That's not far off. The accent, everything. I probably do, you know, I kind of do like, I like my jerseys. You know what I mean? I'm a Jersey guy. I was just watching Jersey Shore Family Reunion. I actually watched that show. It makes me laugh. I love it.
Yeah.
But this was a great episode. Excuse me. And it starts off with a fun little cameo. We have Dick is at the bar, which...
Well, Don't mean to interrupt you, but the name of the episode is Heads You Lose, which I think kind of has multiple meanings, but we'll get into that. But just want to say the name of the episode is Heads You Lose. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Not at all. Heads You Lose, but Dick is trying to win, and he's trying to pick up the girl from Modern Family.
God, he's such a dick.
She pops up. What's this actress's name? I don't know if I even remember.
I don't remember either. Sadly.
She's great though.
She's great.
Yeah. She was pretty good in this. It was kind of obvious. Like it was like a fat close. Like, look who we got. And it was kind of funny. And for a second, I thought, is she playing herself? Like, because Dick is an actor now, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I was a little bit like, I had to, but then when other people, like when this scumbag Bryce comes up and offers a menage a trois or whatever, like just is totally nasty to her.
Yeah.
I realized, okay, no, that's not supposed to be the actress. But for a second, I thought it was. And also, I thought it was funny that Dick mentions Eskimo Brothers.
And has no idea what he's talking about, but apparently.
Do you know where Eskimo Brothers, that's a thing. I'm pretty sure that was created on The League. Did you ever watch that show, The League, on FX?
You know what? I didn't, but you're probably right about that. I think just because it entered the zeitgeist, yeah. I just came to understand what Eskimo Brothers means, which is not what Dick Casablancas thinks it means.
No, no.
He thinks it means sharing a stuntman, but
no,
but it does not mean that.
It means, yes. Well, it could. Right?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But not
in the way Dick was talking.
No, it's fun. It's a fun. I love the way they drop these little. I love the way they take things from like other shows and stuff and kind of integrate it. You know what I mean? As if that it exists in that reality. But this dude Bryce is nasty, and he gets thrown out of this situation. Dick goes off. I thought it was kind of funny that Dick has those roller skate shoes that little kids wear.
Of course he does, because he's like a 12-year-old. Yeah,
and I didn't even know. I mean, like, I don't know what size his feet are, but they probably do make those for adults.
Oh, I'm sure they do. You know? Absolutely.
Yeah. These days.
And once again, we got, like, you know, Nicole is always on – she's always vigilant. She's always on the lookout for guys like Bryce who are causing problems in her club. And she never is like, she never wavers. She's, I mean, part of the deal for her, obviously, is that, I mean, even though she has a club, she wants to look out for the girls. I mean, she wants to look out for anyone who's not being treated well, but she's on the lookout for people like Bryce, and she runs him out of her club.
She runs them right out of the club, and they also have a little conversation picking up of kind of what happened with the bombing that we saw at the end of the last episode, which they kind of downplayed it in this episode. We didn't go to like the crime scene, right?
You're right.
It was very downplayed. That was one thing that surprised me in this episode. It was like this bombing happens and then we have the bombing later in the episode, but they don't really go too deep into what happened. We just find out that there's one dead, 12 injured. I'm not even sure if they say the precise location.
I don't think so. And I wonder if this is just part of Rob's quote unquote economical storytelling that he's plowing ahead.
Yeah.
And you know, he showed one crime scene. He kind of went to great lengths to show the investigation of the motel bombing pretty in depth in episodes 1 and 2. So maybe he figured, you know, we have a set piece in episode 1 and 2 where kind of the investigation of the motel bombing is the focal point, and we kind of get into the minutiae of the investigation of that bombing. So maybe he just thought, we don't need to do this again.
Yeah, which I don't mind. I just thought it was interesting that, you know, I can understand it costs money. You do another big bomb set. What's really the point? But there was no real substantive clues that seemed to come from this particular bombing.
And sadly, and I wonder if this is on purpose, they're all sort of talking about it dispassionately and matter-of-factly. But I guess when you live in a town like Neptune, maybe that's who you become.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? So I found out her name. It's Sarah Hyland.
Yes, that is it.
She plays Haley Dunphy. On Modern Family.
So, she's the oldest daughter of, right.
And
of,
she is actually engaged to this guy, Wells, who my wife and I are aware of because we watch The Bachelor. And he was a contestant on The Bachelorette and on he is now the bartender on Bachelor in Paradise.
And so. Sarah Hyland in real life is engaged to that dude.
Yes.
Cool.
Yep. Okay. So there's a little connection to her. So I actually do know something about modern pop culture, but not music. Don't ask me anything about music. Okay. I don't want no scrubs. Oh, by the way, you know what? I forgot to mention in the last episode, that scrubs thing is actually a little bit of a shout out to The Good Place.
Is it?
Yeah, because there's a little bit of a running joke where about she scrubs. Says that. I don't want no scrubs. And one of the guys sings it in The Good Place. So maybe it's just coincidental, but no. I remembered that from The Good Place.
Nothing in Neptune is a coincidence. Yeah.
So I thought that would be fun. But they kind of go over this. And we also find out that Dick got a movie, a Lifetime Christmas movie. And he's going to Romania. Do they speak English there?
And it involves mannequins. Lots of mannequins.
Yes. He's the mannequin ex-boyfriend. So Sarah Hyland shows up and talks about Bryce. Bryce gets run out, and we move on to what is kind of a dream, but I think is actually what really happened. We see Alonzo and Doty shooting the brothers in the desert. And then Maloof awakes from a dream, right? Giving us the sense that he feels guilty or scared about trying to pay them to kill these guys. And then we cut right to the opening credits. It appears like he was dreaming that happened, but we later find out that is in fact what happened.
Yeah, I mean, we get it from a different angle later on because it's taped on a camera or shot on a camera phone. But Maloof obviously understood what he asked them to do, and that he also understood that they were in fact going to do it.
Yes.
And so now he's dealing with the ramifications of the guilt of that.
And another example of efficient storytelling.
Yeah.
We didn't need to get four scenes of
him feeling guilty.
Yes. Or four scenes of the hitmen trying to find the brothers. No, right. They got the job done. They found him. It's done.
Right. Right?
And if this was 22 episodes, we probably would have had a 4-episode arc of them searching for the brothers. Yes. And maybe it would have been fun, but here we're just getting direct action. And I dig that.
Me too.
Keith and Veronica are at the Maloofs. Logan's there too. And this is when Veronica basically lays out the new theory about Dick Sr. running businesses out of Neptune, destroying it as a spring break destination, and wants the case to continue.
That's right. And the mom continues to be the worst. Oh my God. If she mentions that ring one more time, I'm going to leap into the television screen and slap her around a little
bit. Yeah, she is obsessed with that ring. So they decide to basically, I like this here. We get a kind of, like I was talking about last episode, they lay out what they thought. Now they lay out the new evidence.
Yes.
And where they're going, and then we see them do it.
Right. It's like one thing follows. It's very, in a way, it's very linear storytelling where like one thing happens and it directly leads to the next thing.
And that is what I think they were missing from season two. They're trying to be too clever and convoluted.
I agree.
When it's like, no, you get a bunch of clues, you come to it, and then you kind of clear the decks and you kind of start it and you just keep on doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and that works out well because you carry over the more important aspects. So let's
get to the two things that were talked about at that meeting that we instantly see both Keith and Veronica do. Let's do the Keith part first.
And this was great. Wow. this bar, they, Keith goes to kind of a new hip microbrew, it looks like, right? Microbrewery. Yeah. We got a lot of them out here in Portland, and they all look like this with like casks and wood everywhere and all that kind of stuff and metal. And you can see the ducks in the ceiling, of course, all the time. And this guy, great casting, just really sells it right from the beginning. He's been feeling the crunch. He's selling out to some folks from back home. You know, he makes a little joke about how they're Tennessee Volunteer fans, so they know what it's like not to win or something, right? And
yeah,
I'm taking a little bit of a haircut, but not too much. And it's just a great conversation.
Well, and he seems like a real person.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't seem actory at all. He seems like a legitimate owner of a bar.
I loved it. I really love this scene. This is another reason why I love this episode. He's a great act. And Keith is just kind of listening. But then we get to the end. Did they reach out to you? Because they established that, no, he's like, I'm not selling a big dick, right? Yeah. I'm selling to these other people. And then, yes. But Keith is suspicious. How did this happen? And then we cut. And that's where we have the real fun. And another reason why I love this episode.
Oh my God. I loved it too.
Because Veronica goes to Chino and we get to see two crazy, terrible, horrible people that we love.
Is it weird that we love them so much?
Kind of. We love them. It's okay.
Especially the first one. Like, so since Chino has turned into the focal point of this new theory for Veronica and Keith, it makes sense that Veronica would try to suss out information from two old nemesises or nemesi who are currently at Chino. And of course, the first one is none other than our favorite TA, terrible TA, Tim Foyle.
Tim Foyle. Oh my God. And this guy is still a great actor.
Oh my God. He's so good.
And all I could think about was the wig wasn't there.
Right.
And how this was like the perfect in-between of the PTSD veteran and the TA, you know, since he played both characters. He had finally, like, I could almost see him in his acting class, you know, saying like, I finally get the chance to return to Veronica Mars and show what Tim Foyle could be without the wig. And this is a great scene. Because and so is the second scene that we get to, because they not only talk about what happened in the past, but he starts really jabbing Veronica.
Yeah.
Right? He's like, oh, I see that you're married and that you're very successful now, Veronica. Oh no, really? You know, like it's going back to that same manipulation and relationship that they had before.
And also, it's such smart writing because it highlights the tension that we imagine is within Veronica anyway because of the marriage proposal.
Yes, and how it takes other people to bring it out.
Yes.
Yeah, this is good. But she also returns the favor and gets in some good jabs, as usual. And she always has good jabs. I feel like I don't do a good enough job of writing down dialogue. Of the funny dialogue, but maybe I'll try to do that better in more episodes going forward. But
of course, he asks her if she has a husband, and then she returns a favor by asking him if he has found a husband. Yes.
She kind of matches what he's saying, right?
Yeah.
But we do find out that he's put his skills to task because he is a smart dude. There's no denying that, right?
Yes.
Not smart enough to outsmart Veronica, but he is smart. And he's become kind of a jailhouse lawyer.
Yeah.
And he basically agrees to trade books for info. He doesn't know anything about Clyde, but he does get into a little bit about Dick and Perry.
Yes, because they both worked in the library and he spent a lot of time there.
Yes. And what does he say? He says like that they're misogynist, but different.
Which tracks, because obviously Big Dick Casablancas is a misogynist, and apparently so was Perry. We didn't really get to spend any time with him, but yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. But it also alludes to a mysterious relationship, which we still have to flesh out. Like, what was going on between them?
Yeah. So that's why I felt like in both of these, now, secondarily, we get Mercer, the RA rapist.
That's right.
Who we last saw in that. I just laugh, but that weird shot of him like standing over or was he the one who was shrinking down? I forget now. You know,
no, he was the aggressor.
Yes, that's right.
And then the other guy was like the,
because he was an RA too, right?
No, Mercer was the guy who ran the illegal gambling thing out of his dorm room. And then the other guy was the RA.
Oh, okay. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. Thank you for correcting me. I can't know everything. That's right. He was not the RA rape. He was the kind of dominant one in the relationship.
Correct. And he was the actual rapist. And then the RA, was kind of the facilitator.
Right.
Because he volunteered driving the drunk people home.
Yes.
So he would like pick out the girls for Mercer and then help him cover it up. But Mercer was the actual physical rapist, and he's the one who also shaved off their hair. And then the RA kind of just helped him because of their weird codependent prison guard relationship that right. they had,
that they developed through the exercise, the Stanford yes. prison experiment exercise that creepy. We saw Wallace go through.
Yeah. Creepy.
Yeah. And no Wallace, we haven't seen Wallace again.
Well, I don't know if you noticed him. I noticed it on the third watching, but in episode 3 at the volleyball game, he's sitting behind her.
Oh, okay, cool.
He's okay. sitting next to Nicole.
Well,
and there
not
are a
cool.
few shots.
It's sad that because it was
There's a few shots of them talking to
okay,
each other.
Okay, cool. That's good. Yeah. I like that. They still have, because you could imagine that they'd still just even want to be on the set.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And hang out. But yeah, thanks for reminding me again of all the craziness that happened with Mercer. But you know what? Now that I think about it, it's almost like a kind of like a vampire familiar relationship, you know,
yeah.
how they have their kind of go out and get the, you know, get the virgins for me. Right. I've been watching that funny show, What We Do in the Shadows. That's a really funny show, or an end documentary. If you ever get a chance to see it, it's like kind of a mockumentary about vampires. But that reminded me of that. But this too, Mercer, before he can kind of get into a little bit of information, which we actually find out when Veronica downloads it to Keith in the office.
Yeah.
But Mercer also jabs Veronica about Logan and his relationship with Logan. And enough so that Veronica gets up to leave. And this is just kind of like a fake out. I mean, I think she's playing with him. But it's interesting the way she's so linked emotionally to these past events, you know, like that.
Yes.
they can get right into her psyche like that.
Yes. I mean, I feel like Mercer was playing with her even a little bit more than Tim Foyle did.
Yeah.
But then she instantly mentions the parole hearing that he had just mentioned to her. And she mentions that she'd like to show up to that and that she has a few things to tell them. And then of course he gives up everything. Of course.
Because these guys were going to give up everything. But I get the feeling that I hope we see Tim Foyle again, you know, because I think that he could, that this whole storyline of him being like a jailhouse lawyer in Chino could yeah. play into not only this season, but successive seasons, because I'm convinced, I think they're going to do more seasons of the show. We haven't really even talked about it yet, because we've only seen up to episode 4 as we cover it, but I hope that they're going to do more seasons. And it seems like right now we're recording this a couple weeks after it was released and people are really enjoying it. It's getting great reviews.
It seemed to get like across the board positive
yeah.
reviews.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe most positive ever of the series. So instead of finding out what happened with Mercer, we instead get Veronica in the office with Keith, which I thought this was cool. Again, very economical.
Yes.
And basically she outlines a little bit of what we already knew, that Clyde was Big Dick's protector in the prison. But then we get a little bit more into the actual story that we saw in flashback, which was that Veronica kind of clues Keith into that a lot of people in the prison thought it was kind of a joke. And that leads to, I think, them both being a little bit more interested in what really was going on.
Yeah.
And I like that because they're doing this again. These little, they get to sit in the office and they kind of put the clues together, right? And then Keith tells her about the harassment of the local businesses and what he learned and how they're being offered to be bought out by local businesses, right, that want to come to Neptune. And now when he's looked into it, Keith has found out that these are actually shell companies.
Of course.
And that it's probably just Big Dick doing a double, right? Offering a something double dip. Here. Yeah, double dip Dick. you dip, I dick, you dip. It's kind of smart, but they figured it out. And then Maddie arrives.
And she does, once again, they keep doing this with her where she's like young Veronica, right? She's like Veronica Jr. So Keith is like, just give us a minute. He closes the door and then so that they can finish their conversation away from her ears. Well, not only is she like kind of straining to listen, but at the same time, she's also like looking at the paperwork on the desk. Yeah. And like, that's exactly what Veronica would have done when we were first introduced to her in season one of the TV show.
Yep. It's really good. And I like Maddie. They're not hitting you over the head with her.
Yeah.
And I like that. I really like that because I like to learn about her by what she does and not a lot of exposition. And I think that's how the character actually is. So it works very well. So now we get this scene is just amazing.
It's kind of cinematic and it really shook me both because of the content of the scene, but also just the way it was shot. Lots of outdoor shooting in season four of Veronica Mars. There is no blue screen to be had. Like if a scene's on a beach, they're filming on a beach. And so we see Bryce waking up on a beach. It looks like he has something's going on, but it like we as a viewer have to like realize it just as he's realizing it. And he wakes up maybe after like a long night of partying, he's like asleep on the beach and he gets up and we quickly realize he has a frickin' bomb strapped to his neck.
Yeah. This was crazy. And they do a nice kind of unbroken shot of him like running towards the people. And really, it's really interesting. And it touches on the great character use because you see him being so despicable, drugging girls' drinks, getting run out of the bar. And then the next time you see him, he's in this horrible position and you can't help but feel terrible for him, right? Yeah. And he's got this bomb strapped around his neck. And you see the face of the girl who he comes up to first. She's first kind of like, oh my God. And then she realizes, I got to get out of here, right? Yeah. But then she's kind of frozen. And we don't see the explosion, but we kind of hear it. And this is a great, fantastic series of shots. And it reminded me of that actual, there's a great documentary series on Netflix, but there was really a guy who this happened. There was a bomb around his neck and he was like in front of like a Burger King or something like that. I got to check it on Netflix. Maybe by next episode I'll have it. But they're always kind of pulling interesting real life stuff into the show. And this is an example of that because this something like this actually happened in real life.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a crazy story. The documentary, I think it's like I thought it was like a 3-episode series or something, but it's really good. So And then just like we've been saying, the show keeps on rolling, right?
We get some really economical character work for Chief Langdon. We finally find out like kind of what her deal is, which is that she's angling to become the new chief of police for San Diego, much bigger town. And she actually has people there. I think the mayor and the chief of staff. But you know, shit's happening. Some kid's head just got blown off. And, you know, she kind of rolls her eyes to find out that the FBI has finally arrived. There are two agents. The people from San Diego seem like that, like she's pooped that they want to scrape off the bottom of their shoe.
Yeah, it kind of seems like that was the interview. As soon as they saw how she was more interested in the interview than actually a big case she had, they were kind of turned off by it. Like she showed her stripes, right?
Yeah.
And we get our FBI agents, Agent Wood, and then it's Agent Leo D'Amato.
Your boyfriend.
My boyfriend. My man. I love him. He's fantastic, man.
Yeah, he's great.
And we quickly get a little bit of an uptick in the kind of case level, figuring out why the FBI has been called in by the mayor. And the FBI says they think that this is a serial killer. A serial bombist, serial killer. Yes. And it's interesting that they make that. And later on in the episode, we see that everybody starts calling it a serial killer, right? And I think that that's interesting because I think that that kind of plays into the pen angle and all that and kind of how people need to create a narrative around these events. And how kind of the institutions then like support that narrative. And I think it's kind of an undercurrent that I thought was kind of interesting. But the police chief quickly mentions, why don't you join? We've got, you know, murder heads, podcast people and private investigators. And of course, Leo says private investigators. And we get hard cut right to Leo delivering a pizza to Veronica. But Logan's there. They do their little dude talk thing, which I thought was kind of cute and funny. And Logan does a power move. Hey, why don't you just come here and wait? And Leo's like, okay. And they just hang out together, I guess.
Yeah. One of the things about, I don't know if they, it's either the first scene they've had together or the longest scene they've had together in the entire run of the show. It may in fact be the first time they've had a scene together as actors and characters, but it was interesting to see them talking because then you could see the full spectrum of the type of man that Veronica has been attracted to throughout her life.
Yeah.
Because Leo and Logan are very, very different people.
Definitely. And it's also kind of cool because like you say, the full spec, we've like seen this so many times in the history of Veronica Mars before that Logan has kind of like Piz or whoever, right. Has kind of had to stomach that. Right. And then now this more mature Logan, it is kind of a power move to be like, oh, just sit here and wait with me, you know, or you want to see her that much. But he's not like, you know, he's not like punching him or anything like that. You know, he just seems like, all right, come on in, you know? But there is still that Logan-ness about it where he kind of has to make it into a little bit of a competition. Taking a little break from our Veronica Mars discussion to remind you to go to our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com, baby. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR and use code DVR20. Get 20% off your order, no minimum. That's right, baby. It's all there for the taking. If you like NCAA, NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, Star Wars, Game of Thrones, Marvel, DC, they've got everything. Hey, man, they got new stuff for the Aladdin movie. It's amazing stuff. Check it out. Cufflinks.com has everything along with those classic styles that just look good. They're not all genre stuff. They've got the classic stuff, too. So go to cufflinks.com/DVR and use code DVR20 today. So then we get a great scene. I really enjoyed this, and I thought it was kind of like it kind of shocked me what happens here. Alonso, first we get Alonso arriving at what we find out is Weevil's shop with Weevil's sister.
Yeah.
And then he kind of parks over in the corner there and they stay in their truck. Then we see a bunch of PCHers hanging out, roughhousing. We recognize one of them as the guy who mugged Veronica.
Yes.
Veronica arrives and they quickly get into it. She challenges him and she shows her phone, which has the picture that Logan was taking earlier, which is of him shitting in the ice bucket container thing at the hotel. So now the kind of circle is all there to see, and they get into it. And I was kind of like, they really rough up Veronica here. She ends up stabbing them. They really acted this out well. Like it was pretty rough.
Well, and I'm once again amazed by the sober and adult tone of the flash of violence, like that it comes out of nowhere. Yeah. And that once it turns violent, it is super violent. I don't know if it's non-network violent. You could probably show most of what they showed on a network show at this point.
So, yeah.
Especially if it's at like the 9 o'clock hour, but still just kind of the way it quickly turns, like you said, and when it does turn it. And then the other thing that's great about it is the camera keeps going back to Alonso, who is obviously not going to help her, and that he's sort of bemused by what he's seen.
Yes. And also taking note of Veronica.
Yes.
And who she is and who's this tiny little white girl who's going to ride right in there and challenge everybody. And he also sees Weevil come out. Yeah. And we get to see the first scene with Weevil and Veronica together.
Yes.
And he asserts his dominance by shooting a gun in the air. Also cementing to us that he's back in this life of crime, right?
Yes.
And then we also find out through this great scene with Veronica and Weevil, you know, Veronica is not friends with him.
No.
She's very disappointed in him and very upset and accuses him of doing the grunt work. And she kind of she's being a little bit forward. There's still a familiarity here. Because she's very forward with her accusations towards him, right?
Well, yeah, because she accuses him of, she accuses him of things that he is probably doing, which is, well, she supposes that he has teamed up with Big Dick Casablancas and that Weevil is allowing Big Dick to use the PCHers as their muscle to terrorize the boardwalk business folk. Like they're the ones pooping in ice machines and they're the ones doing the vandalism and the graffiti and the muggings, all to scare the boardwalk businesses away. And she may be right about that, but she also accuses him of like being involved in the bombings. Yeah. And she calls him Fagin from Oliver Twist.
Which is not good. Not good at all.
Right.
And is not in keeping with the Weevil we knew who did have a code, right?
Yes.
And even within his criminal gang, when he was heading up the PCHers, he didn't want them to do certain things. And it's gone past that, it seems.
Well, I also wonder if one of the reasons why she's mad at him is because she's projecting. Like maybe it seems like she's mad at him for not escaping his life. Well, she didn't escape her life either. Like she didn't take the lawyer job in New York. True. She came back to Neptune.
Yeah.
So maybe the person she's really mad at is herself. And she's just taking it out on Weevil a little bit.
Yeah. And Weevil is not he doesn't get mad at her.
No.
He accepts it and he seems kind of sad, but then he's also resigned in the sense that he says to her, "We don't all have the choices you have."
Right.
You know, and that is an interesting idea because Weevil has always represented the institutions of Neptune and the underbelly too, and how those two are linked. And it makes you think about if they are involved in this stuff, why, right? And going back to the last episode when we're talking a little bit about where Weevil's family is or what's going on, who knows? It makes me think, when I initially saw this, I said, oh man, what have they got on Weevil? And we don't even know what happened eventually with his case, you know, and all that kind of stuff from the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, you know something that we forgot to mention last episode?
What?
That they mentioned that Mac is in the Middle East.
Mac is, it's like a throwaway line that you could, because it's when Maddie is listening into the door and she hears Keith say that, because he's saying that, you know, computer work and it would be great
if someone to help you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that kind of made me sad. I wonder why she's not on. Maybe she'll show up.
Who knows? Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, because we forgot to mention that. I just was thinking about it because, we had the return of Weevil. But let's see. And also, again, let's remind a lot. We see that Alonzo gets filled in by Weevil's sister. He makes direct reference to Veronica.
And she says that she mentions that Veronica's dad used to be sheriff. And she mentions that they have a weird history with her brother, which is absolutely true. Definitely. It is kind of a weird history.
It is. Everyone in Neptune has a weird history.
True.
And speaking of weird, Veronica arrives home to find Logan and Leo.
Oh my God. It's like boyfriends. It's like Christmas of boyfriends past.
Yeah. You never know what could happen. And then Logan makes a joke that Piz is back there too. See, that's why I love Logan now, because the way
he makes jokes like that.
Yeah. And he's kind of perfected his humor is now dry instead of angry, sarcastic teen. You know, so instead of saying like, yeah, I bet Piz is back there, he just says, yeah, I think Piz is back there too. And I burst out laughing because that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And then we find out a little bit about Leo. He's divorced.
Yeah.
And they set up lunch for the next day.
And Veronica's like, when she finds out that he's in the FBI, she's like, I'm a little jealous.
Yeah.
And it's a great callback actually to the whole FBI thing that Veronica might have done in another life, quote unquote.
In the alternate universe of 12 minutes that we talked about. And I have to say that just Leo being in the FBI, I think it's great. I want this show to continue for like 8 more seasons, but I hope that this brings Veronica into that world that they, and ideas that they had for her, you know, at that time, they can kind of play out. And it also gives us an opportunity for her to be involved in something that may be connected to Neptune, but bigger than Neptune in the future, which I think is a step that this show could take. You know, it would be interesting if Veronica Mars was not set in Neptune for a season. I mean, it's totally part of the show, or even for a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But I think it would be interesting. I mean, we can do anything now, right?
Yeah.
But I thought this was cool. And then there's a nice little scene when Veronica and Logan talk about Leo. And then Veronica says, I see some of that old Logan Eccles fire. I want to tap into it, right? She says something like, I want that intravenously. Which is sexual innuendo. But he's just, let's watch TV.
And let's watch Harlots.
Yeah.
So he still gets an indirect dig in, but he does it in like his now chill, dry way.
Yeah.
But it also highlights what is going on with Veronica. Like, why is she most attracted to Logan when he could be jealous of an old boyfriend?
Yeah, exactly. It has to be that kind of friction, right? Which is not healthy. Not healthy, Veronica. You don't need that in your life.
Yeah.
So now we get a real fun scene, another Murderhead Club meeting. And Maddie's there kind of stalking in the background.
Yeah.
They talk about basically recovering from the fact that, you know, they were wrong, right?
Well, that pen was wrong.
You're right. You're absolutely right. It's focused on him.
Yeah, because they say we never settled on Daniel Maloof. You did, but then in your interview, you mentioned our group as if to make it sound like we all thought it was Daniel Maloof. So they're a little not happy with him, particularly Clark Duke is not happy with him. And so they're kind of like dressing him down and kind of chastising him as their quote unquote leader. But then, of course, you know, there's the distraction of the fact that Maddie is there, and then they start talking to her. And then, of course, she quickly gives up the information of what she learned of her digging while at the Mars office, and what she overheard, and the paperwork that she saw on the desk. And so in a way, she kind of gives up the whole Dick Clyde theory that they may be behind the bombing.
This is great. And they're so, it's fun too, because they're like, oh my God, what did you find out? And then she's like, no, that's not what happened. I was there. This is what, right. All of a sudden they're being their dorky, like little pieces of, you know, evidence, whatever. And she's like, no, this is what actually happened, and just breaks it down for them and is kind of upstages Penn. But Penn cannot possibly be upstaged because he's always listening, and he's just going to use this information for his own benefit.
Well, here's the trick that Patton Oswalt, here's like a glimpse of like the acting that I kind of think is extraordinary in this performance. Like during that moment, that you were just talking about, Patton Oswalt is doing this thing where I feel like there are times where I can see the gears turning.
Yeah.
In Penn's head. Because he's always thinking.
Yeah. And he is thinking that he's got to get up in front of some cameras.
Right. Exactly.
We have a fun little scene here in the elevator of the Neptune Grand. First, Veronica and Keith are kind of playing with each other and giving some jabs. And then Logan gets into the elevator and he's cool. But then the congressman is like super uptight Maloof, because he is. And yeah. I guess he has reason to be. And then Logan's like, yeah, he's just waiting for me to leave. See, that's the kind, like he's still giving the good delivery. And they kind of break it down here. Maloof shows them a new email from the blackmailer taking responsibility for both of the bombings, right? Both of the new bombings.
Yes.
And the point is that these blackmailers want him to continue running and run for Senate and continue his political career so they can continue to have their kind of Manchurian candidate that yeah. they can tell him what to do.
My question is, are they actually connected to the bombings, or is this just a convenience that they're assigning themselves to bolster their case for him to listen to them?
Well, that's the thing, is that Veronica seems to doubt this so heavily that we don't get more of a line of questioning. Like, we have it mentioned that he might have changed this vote or this vote, but Keith and Veronica are not sitting him down and saying, okay, tell us every instance of, you know, to try to find yeah. in the same respect that they're doing that with Big Dick. They don't seem to be doing the same thing on the email blackmailer side.
Yes.
So in kind of while looking at it, I'm saying to myself, this could be a plot contrivance, or it could be good writing in the fact that Veronica and Keith are eliminating this line of inquiry without really investigating it very well.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
You know, because they really aren't, you know, yeah. I mean, there's not much to investigate. It's like some email that he says he can't even forward, but they're, you know, and then they have the line about Mac not being there to get into the computer stuff. But has that ever stopped them before? Like, you know, they have to find alternate ways right. to get to the bottom of this. But I just think perhaps the plot hasn't got there yet, you know?
Yeah.
But we shall see.
Well, then Logan comes out into the hallway, interrupts them, says, you should come in and see this. And I'm thinking when I'm watching the episode the first time, I'm like, whoa, like I thought the room was going to be ransacked or like, or they were going to find a dead body or something. But of course they go into the room and who was in there giving audience, but Vinnie Van Lo.
Yeah. It's even worse than if the room was ransacked.
Right. Because of course the horrible Amalia Maloof, Daniel's mom, has hired Vinnie Van Lo. Why? To find the ring, of course.
Yeah, to find the ring. So he's got to get involved. And there is a little bit of a fun jabs here where Vinny goes through like the Bald Avengers and he calls Keith Captain Noherica and Veronica Pepper Potts. Right. And I thought that this was kind of cute and funny, and they always give you the opportunity to have some jokes here. And this, along with the ride up on the elevator, was again a little bit of a welcome comedic break, even when there's a lot of download of clues and information and exposition, we still get some fun stuff here.
Tied to the dream that started off the episode when everyone's leaving, because of course Vinnie Van Lo drives the Marses off. They don't want to be in the same room with him. But as they're all leaving, Vinnie Van Lo is waiting for his elevator outside the hotel room. Congressman Maloof goes out there and offers him a side job. Find the cartel guys. I'll give you, you know, lots of money. And so of course Vinnie says yes. But once again, we're seeing kind of the moral slipperiness of Daniel Maloof. Like, he wants to be a good guy, but in lots of ways, he's really not a good guy.
Yeah, and he's desperate.
He's very desperate. We did skip a sequence in the Mars detective office where Keith first fills Veronica in on Clyde's ex.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. That's right. That's very important. Yes.
Because the whole idea is that Keith is buttering up Clyde to get information about Big Dick by presumably doing this case to find his ex-girlfriend. But of course, you and I wondered about this in past podcasts, that there had to be more to the story about Clyde looking for an ex-love other than that he missed her. And so of course, Keith fills Veronica in that, of course, the ex-girlfriend absconded with almost $400,000 of Clyde's money from a job and that he's looking for it.
Yeah. And that, but the funny thing, what Keith thought was funny is that she actually still wants, she's still in love with him.
Yeah. And she's still crazy about it.
Yeah. She's still crazy about him. And that's why I think this is kind of cool, because it's like, every time we find something out about Clyde, it's a gray area.
Right, because, I mean, presumably this Ichiko is like not really a crazy person. So if she's still in love with him, then, I mean, is he lovable? Like, he seems charismatic and charming. So, I mean, I might be falling in love with him a little bit.
It's great, but I like that part of it. I thought that this was kind of neat. And it also gave Keith an in to kind of like his friend, and also gave him an in to accepting the medical care.
Yes.
You know, that there was another aspect to this, that she still liked him. And I also skipped over, this was the part where Penn shows up at Mars Investigation and says, let's work together, Mars and Murderheads together to solve the case.
And I feel like he actually made a legitimate point that even though some of the people in Murderheads are wackos and losers, there are other members of Murderheads that are legitimate investigators that could do legwork for Keith and Veronica.
Yeah, it's like that slippery slope, right, of how involved they can get with these people. But Penn does really seem to tell them that he wants to set things right. He apologizes, right, that he threw it all on the congressman and he feels bad about it and he wants to try to set things right. But we all know in the end he really just wants more attention.
Well, so then of course we get back to the star of this episode, Leo D'Amato, who really gets a ton of screen time in this episode. I don't know if he's going to continue to have this much screen time, but he gets a ton of screen time. And we cut to Veronica in the place where he's working at the Neptune police station. He of course conveys that the sheriff is not a fan, that she's slow walking all of the evidence, and that she doesn't seem to have time for anything other than her own career. Yeah. And I think I probably added that in. I don't think Leo said that, but that is in fact what's happening. But once again, we get to see this easy rapport between Leo and Veronica that they have not lost since she met him for the first time when she was still in high school. And so, in fact, they're eating Chinese food together. It's like whenever they're together, they're eating food. It's great. So then, of course, she's like, let's go to the hardware store, or I'm going to the hardware store to investigate this nail thing that Penn brought up. She has a picture of the nail that they took out of his back. And she's like, you want to come with me? And it's just great because it's, once again, it's character work, but it's also like ground level investigation.
Yes. It's, and it, and like you were saying, we just roll right into the next scene, right? They're at they're at the police station, and then they say, hey, let's go over here. And then they go there. And then while they're there, they see Clyde and they think he's buying bomb making materials. Right. Yes. And they have a little kind of cute watching them. Right. It's like Manhattan murder mystery. I love it.
Yeah.
And
and
they follow, ooh, let's follow them. And every time Veronica is like really serious and whatever, Leo kind of lightens it and kind of brings her up and finds. That's why I like Leo and Veronica together, because I think Leo finds the humor in Veronica and he finds the lightness in her, and he doesn't take her too seriously. Like he takes her, he values her, and I think he's in love with her, but he doesn't, let herself take herself too seriously. And they end up right back at Mars Investigations, where Clyde is going to hang out with Keith. And we get a really great scene of them again, hanging out, having some drinks, having fun, but Keith is not totally honest with him.
No,
which is interesting because he gives the email of Ichiko, but he doesn't say, I know about the money and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it makes me wonder, like, where does the bromance end and the investigation start, or the surveillance? So I believe that Keith legitimately has positive friendship feelings for Clyde. But at the same time, I think Keith hasn't lost sight of the fact that Clyde is a potential suspect in a horrific bombing case.
Definitely. And I like that. Yeah. You know, it reminds me of why I could never be a good reporter, because I could never have those kind of relationships, you know?
Yeah.
And it takes a special kind of person to be able to sit with a person, have fun and laugh while at the whole time kind of lying to them, you know, and playing like gaming them out. Yeah. And I just don't have that capacity. I'm pretty much a straight shooter. But that's what makes Keith a good detective.
Well, right? Yes, absolutely. But here's something even more interesting, I think, is that he basically has shared his health history or his health situation with Clyde, but hasn't even shared it with his daughter yet.
True. Yeah, you're right. And I guess that kind of – it's interesting, the kind of compartmentalization of that, you know, and we're definitely due for Veronica and Keith to have a meeting of the minds where they just basically break it all down and have a little bit of emotional discussion.
There's got to be a come to Jesus moment coming up where Veronica finds out about the true extent.
That's the term I was looking for.
Well, I picked it right up there. Yeah, there's got to be a come to Jesus moment where Veronica finds out the true extent of Keith's health difficulties.
Yeah.
And then they sort of talk about it.
Yeah. And you could imagine him saying, you know, like, you're not even talking about this. We're not talking to each other, Veronica, you know, and kind of move this along, because we want them to get along.
Yeah, absolutely.
We talk about the free medical care.
Clyde sort of artfully doesn't answer the question about Big Dick, not really, because Keith ends up asking him, like, how did you and Big Dick come to be? Like, that's an unlikely relationship. How did that happen? And Clyde never really gets around to answering that question.
Yeah. It kind of gets lost in the drink.
Right.
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 And so now we go to another kind of hangout sesh.
Yeah.
And this is Logan and Maloof kind of hanging out. And this was actually a rare time when you get to see the congressman not in a crazy, hectic, you know, emotional. He's just chilling. And you get a little aspect of why people would like him, right? Or would want to vote for him. Because he kind of is like peppering Logan about being in the military and about his life with Veronica. And Logan opens up. And he says maybe it's good that they're apart sometimes, that they're both kind of loners. And that's interesting that he kind of opens up like that. And
well, it kind of carries on a theme of all of our main characters feeling more comfortable saying things to strangers than to each other.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah, there's no – you don't have to worry about the blowback.
Yeah.
Right? You can just kind of tell him. And at the same time here, we get another – this we keep on propelling from scene to scene. Maloof gets a text from Vinny that he found the cartel guy's car because he had given him the license plate or a description, I should say. And then we go right to Maloof going to the Hitman Hotel. And I thought this was really cool. We don't see Vinny investigating. We don't need to drag it on with an extraneous B plot of like, you know, the cartel guys are around the corner and Vinny's looking. It could be a little funny, but we just get right to the business, you know?
Yeah.
And he wants him to call it off, but it's too late.
They show him the video, which is also of the time. Of course, if you're hitmen, you're going to tape it, especially if you want to make sure to get your money from the mark.
Yeah.
So they show him the video of them shooting the two brothers in the desert, very similar to the quote unquote dream he had, maybe not a dream, but maybe a dream. And then of course they remind him that he owes them $100,000.
Yeah. He's in trouble. And it immediately made me think of the ring that the Vinny's out looking for the ring. He already talked to Vinny. Vinny found the cartel guys. The ring's worth a lot of money. And so we're unspoiled past this episode, people. So I do a little bit more of theorizing in the second episode today, but it made me think of that right away. Cause it's like Chekhov's ring. You keep on talking about the ring, the ring, the ring. Well, now we have a purpose that it can serve. It could perhaps pay this debt that he owes now to Alonzo and Doty.
Yeah. He's actually reminding me a little bit of like the William H. Macy character from Fargo, the movie, like his like his level of desperation.
Yeah, you're right. How this is Fargo.
He starts off doing one thing and then it kind of snowballs. And then he ends up in such a desperate situation that he's like willing to do all sorts of other horrible things.
Yeah. So. Well, I should say, and as I said before, Fargo is a good point of reference, but also that borrows from a whole history of films and detective stories that have had these type of characters. Now we get one of my favorite scenes in all of Veronica Mars. I felt it was great. It's Leo and Veronica in the car on a stakeout in front of Mars. Like they're staking out her own place. She could just walk in there, or why they don't just like, you know, walk up and listen through the door. Keith and Clyde are just getting drunk anyway. They don't know that. But this scene is so amazing because that's what I love about Leo. Like, so much is like you're talking to people you don't care, not putting it on the line, right? And Leo just opens up. He's real. He's honest. He challenges Veronica. He challenges her about being with Logan for so long, which is just like I was saying about Piz, now Logan, right? Yeah. And he just says to her, like, you're in your early mid-30s here. You're trying to act like you don't have much to say about Logan and a proposal and all this, but it's like, come on, you're totally deflecting and acting like it wouldn't be normal for a woman of your age to be thinking or even like having a person ask you about possibly getting married or having a family or anything like that.
Yeah.
Which I thought just the way he said it and the way this was acted out, I thought it was great.
I thought it was refreshingly great because I feel like in any other movie, there would be he would be trying to create sexual subtext between them.
Yeah.
By coming on to her. But none of that. He's just being in the moment. He's being her friend. He's listening to her. He's giving her honest feedback based on what he's hearing from her. It's a great scene. It starts off kind of cutesy and funny because he does the reveal where he always has food in his pockets, in like all these baggies.
Yeah, that was so cute. And it relates it to his story of his ex-wife.
Right. And he's very honest. Like, I love Leo. Like, she asks him why his marriage didn't work out. He gives a brutally honest, like, two-sentence answer to that question. That, you know, it's great. And then he kind of reflects that same honesty back on her later on in the scene when she's like she's basically saying a series of unhealthy things and he's basically calling her out on every single one of them.
Yeah. And very calmly.
Yeah. And with, like,
with love.
And with like, yeah, lovingly calling her out on it.
And especially you say things she says that are unhealthy. The top here is what she says at the end when they talk about the proposal. And she says that it made her like kind of angry, you know? And he's like, why? And she says, because she thinks that Logan just asked to have the upper hand,
right?
You know, in the relationship.
So that he could wear the I love you more pants.
Which is insane.
It is insane.
See, I should take a step back because that's judgmental. I could say it would be insane. I could understand the history that we've seen with the Veronica Mars character, right? And the way she perceives interpersonal relationships as almost a continuation of her work life, right? She doesn't trust people. She's very untrusting. She doesn't let them in. There's a lot of compartmentalizing and a lot of caveats, right? Yeah. And a lot of hypocrisy. And it's not insane, but it's hurtful, right? It makes you sad. I've been in situations in my own life where someone has made a response like that about their relationship. And then my only response would be like, man, that is a really kind of confrontational way to view your love life.
Yeah.
You know, that it's about who has the upper hand and who has the power. It's not about supporting each other, loving each other, lifting each other up. It's about basically trying to push the other one down. So because does that mean that you think you have the upper hand? Because Logan needed to take it from you? You know, like it's interesting.
Well, it's a great character scene. It fits right in with what's happening with, you know, the narrative of the mystery, and it doesn't advance the mystery one iota, but it is just this totally enjoyable, brilliantly well-written scene between two characters that we sort of know and love because they've both been in the show since season one. Just talking about their lives, talking about each other, talking about themselves. And it's just, you're right. It's a great scene.
Yeah. I loved it. I loved it. I love Leo. So then we get, them deciding, he does have this great line where he says, you know, I don't want to say anything, but your boy seems chill when he's talking about Logan. And I wanted to say that earlier, but I didn't want to ruin Leo's thunder here. But yes. I agree. I like that he said that too, because it's really cool when a character in a story makes reference to how we've seen another character change.
Or how they've been talked about.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Their perception. Yeah. Of them. And I really like that. And I like the way that for the first time here, really in a Veronica kind of like love entanglement, these guys are refusing to blame each other. Right.
Isn't that refreshing?
Yeah. Like they're not fighting.
Yeah.
They just both, they like her and Leo's being a friend and respecting boundaries, but he's not puffing up the chest, and Logan didn't need to do that either.
Yeah. You know? I mean, the one who is in sort of an emotional predicament is her.
Yes. Yep.
But they're both acting like they're both being super healthy, really, about the whole thing.
Yeah. And then we get a fun scene here. Actually, this whole series here in the office, Leo and Veronica decide to finally break their long stakeout of their own place. And her own place, and they find Keith and Clyde drunk, and then Veronica pulls a fun little thing where she leans on the table so the bag spills.
Yeah.
So they can see whether it's kind of like the pellets that they thought were might be in the bomb.
Yeah.
But it turns out it's just door hinges.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Veronica and Keith, I think we should do this. Heath and I did some dialogue from Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that I should find this, and maybe next episode we can do this scene, because this was super funny when Veronica and Keith are doing this old-timey detective routine.
It's like from a Humphrey Bogart movie. It's great. I mean, it's like old-timey, like 1940s detective movie dialogue. But here's what before we get away from it, I want to mention when Clyde finds out that Leo works for the FBI, that he's an FBI agent, he does make a joke like, does everyone in Neptune work for law enforcement? But then he quickly leaves. And I don't want to forget to note that, that Clyde is definite. I mean, obviously he used to be in Chino. He's an ex-con. Of course, he's never going to be super comfortable with like law enforcement, but this does tend to reinforce the notion that maybe Clyde has something to hide.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, that's why they're doing such a great job of keeping him in the gray.
Yeah.
You know, he does duck out and that, and you know what though? He would duck out anyway, right? Like, why would he want to be, you know, like
right. I mean, like, you're right, which is what makes it complicated. Yeah. Did he duck out because that's what he would have done anyway? Or did he duck out because he's helping Big Dick Casablancas, you know, terrorize Neptune?
Yeah. Or whatever else they might be doing. Big Dick. Right. Speaking of Big Dick.
Oh, my God.
Keith and Veronica go to another town council meeting. I love these. They're doing a fantastic job. We get to see a bunch of different characters. We see people in the background. We see people that we know. We start right off there with Big Dick at the podium calling for people to support Nut. And we get a lot of great signs that say vote Nut or down with Nut, anything having to do with Dick and Nuts, which is endlessly funny to my 10-year-old mind. But then Penn gets up. Well, before Penn gets up, I should say, they do a little bit of a thing here in this scene where they kind of go from people speaking to little scenes off with Veronica and Keith. And I just want to mention before we get to kind of what Penn gets to is that they see Max.
Oh my God. What a welcome face to see in the crowd.
Yes, that was awesome. And he's grown up to be quite a handsome man, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's lost like the baby weight.
Yeah.
He's kind of lean now. He's leaned up. The facial hair he's rocking the facial hair.
Yeah.
He kind of looked like grizzly, but like really sexy and handsome.
Hey, cleaned I'm like, up well.
I'm like, right on. Good and for him. Of course, the guy that we were introduced to who was running an illegal business where he sold tests to college students or study guides to college students so that they could pass their tests. And he now owns a marijuana dispensary called How High Are You?
Yes. And then we get a nice little joke where Keith mistakes what he says. He's like, I'm fine. How are you?
and then we get a not as great of a joke, but Veronica asks him if he's speaking. And he was like, no, the business owners thought that having the weed guy isn't really putting your best foot forward. Yeah,
probably true. Unfortunately. Yes. But that is probably true. But that little thing with Keith also played into the memory thing. And they're doing, that was a joke, but it reminded me of that, right?
Well, we also forgot to mention that when they were filling Daniel Maloof in at the beginning of the episode, Keith forgot his name.
Yes, true. Yep.
And that Veronica noted it, but she didn't follow up with him.
Yeah, it's happening. It you know, it's a continual thing. And the way they just kind of add a little spice here and there is real great character traits. And it's building that up. So basically what happens is after we kind of see Max, we see some we see Big Dick talking some stuff in the crowd.
Yeah.
Penn gets up. And he first is a little bit like apologetic. He seems like he still is standing up for himself, but he's not ready to unveil what he's going to unveil, which is he then basically just right then and there accuses Clyde and Big Dick of trying to destroy Neptune as a spring break destination, that they did the bombings, they did everything, and basically outs the entire theory that Veronica and Keith were keeping to themselves. And also they're not going to be able to probably work Clyde in the same way. It really messes things up. And it also causes the vote to be postponed.
Yes, which, and then Big Dick has an extreme reaction to that and becomes very physical, has to be held back. The thing about Penn's speech, though, or when he's up at the microphone, when he starts talking about Clyde and Big Dick Casablancas and what they may be behind, he's using specific phrases. And because he uses specific phrases to talk about it, that's what clues Veronica and Keith into the fact that, or that's when they realize that he bugged their office.
Yeah, I didn't quite get this. And the reason I had it in the notes, I was like, they figure it out, but I didn't understand how. I guess I accept it because it's in this story and our characters told it. But I would also accept that he kind of could have known this from Maddie and especially from Maddie, right?
Yeah.
And also just picking up on what Keith and Veronica were kind of doing. You know, he's got his nose to the grindstone. He's kind of hearing things, figuring it out. But it does make sense that that's why he came with the pizza.
Yes.
Right? When he did that kind of secondary truce, let's work together thing. That's probably when he planted that device in their office.
Well, let's also not forget that the last thing Big Dick says to the mayor is that you're going to regret this.
Yes. Yeah. So we have now Big Dick seems to be ready to take it up to the next level.
Yeah.
This vote for Nut has been postponed. Penn has outed this theory again. Now he's got a second. He totally didn't learn from the first time around, because it's obviously just about getting attention. And then we cut to, I thought this was this Liam?
No, not Liam Fitzpatrick.
Okay,
no.
It looked like one of the Fitzpatricks, I thought, but maybe I'm wrong, is out riding a kind of dune buggy type thing.
Yeah.
And he runs into one of the brothers. It looks like our cartel hitmen. Looks like either Alonzo or Doty should have taken another shot, right?
Yeah, because you can actually see the blood spots on his shirt from where they shot him twice. It looked like one was in the shoulder, one was closer to the chest, but evidently not kill shots because this guy is still definitely running around.
Yeah, and I thought this was really interesting, man. And I just love this episode. I freaking loved it. It just kept on moving. Like I said, I watch it three times. I watch it one time and I said, you know, I love this so much, but I didn't feel the flow. Cause I guess I don't know, maybe I was taking notes, or usually I take notes after, but I was like taking notes in my mind.
Yeah.
Then I just watch. I said, I'm just going to sit and watch it like I do all the other ones. I think I was getting a little ahead of myself. I was like, wow, this is really great. And then last night I was like, I'm just going to watch it again. I really just wanted to watch the scene with Leo and Veronica, but I ended up watching it again. And I just really love this season, man. You know, we're at the halfway point here.
Yeah.
And I just go back to what I said in the my very first statement. I just feel like this is the truest expression of Veronica Mars that has ever been. And I enjoy every scene, every episode, every little character that pops up, every reference. It's fun. It's funny. It's exciting. It's propulsive. It's also now the mystery. When I start thinking about it, I'm like, who did this? Who did that? But I'm also accepting of them coming up with new information that we don't know. And that's being okay. And sometimes you feel like a show is tricking you when they do that, right? Yeah. Like, oh no, I should have known the murderer or the person has to be the person we see in the first scene. But I like the way new information keeps on popping up.
Yeah.
So this is cool. And how the brother will play into this, who knows?
Well, especially since Veronica has noted Alonso and he's noted her.
Yeah.
Because the brother is obviously going to have a story to tell, and it's going to involve Alonso and Dodie, whether he knows their names or not. I mean, he probably doesn't know their names, but still, he knows what they look like. So, so it's interesting how this story is sort of progressing. The other thing that's interesting is Penn was completely wrong about Daniel Maloof. Does that mean he's also wrong about Clyde and Big Dick? Or maybe it means he's partially wrong about it, but they're guilty of something else.
Yeah.
Like, so it's really interesting where we are at the halfway mark. Seems like one theory has been put to bed. Did Daniel Maloof and his family do it to prevent the younger brother from marrying the girl? I guess that was always a ridiculous theory to begin with. That someone would bomb a motel office just to ensure that the guy didn't marry someone. But that theory got completely blown out of the water. And now we're looking at Clyde and Big Dick Casablancas. You know, I would say, this is just my theory at this point, that Big Dick is not capable of mass murder. He's ruthless. He's a real estate cheat. He's definitely willing to take advantage of people, but I find it hard to believe that he would be responsible for bombing people and killing people.
Yeah. And you know what? I think your dog agrees, Ken.
That's right. Now, what Clyde is capable of, I have no idea yet.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment. Big Dick is for money and power. And, you know, he could be taking a step up to murder, right? And taking a step up to doing this, but I don't see it. Maybe that's why Clyde is involved and he's pushing him. But I still think the emailer, the blackmailer, if you're involved in like, you know, votes and all this kind of stuff, it does kind of connect to like a larger conspiracy, you know? But then also, let's not forget that one thing that Veronica Mars has done in the past too is it could be something very personal and direct that we're not really even thinking about at this point, you know? And that's why I remain open to that. I don't need the mystery. For me is fun and it keeps the story going. But for me, it's always about the characters and everything. And they've done a great job of balancing it here, where I'm actually more interested in the mystery than I think I probably was since season one, of really who's doing it, what's really going on here. And I'm interested to see how, if it is a Chinatown-like thing where it's like all of these institutions wrapped into each other, and really in the end, it's kind of like Neptune doing it to itself, you know? It's like a bigger kind of meaning there. But,
or it could be that it's going to turn out that there are multiple mysteries happening and we just don't know it yet.
Yep. 10 Little Indians.
That's right.
I like it. All right, Ken, this has been so fun. This is awesome, man. I'm going to go watch the next two. Let's record in another hour. Oh, wait, it would take longer than that. I love it, man. Any final thoughts?
No, just that we're at the halfway point, like you said, and I feel like we're knee deep in this mystery, but we're also knee deep in really some great character work, particularly with Keith and Veronica and Logan, who are the three people in the title sequence. So, of course, you would think that they're going to do great character work with them. But it's interesting to see how the mystery is mirrored in their character stuff. So yeah. I look forward to more of all of that.
Me too. And I wonder if we're going to see Dick. I wonder, did he go away? Are we not going to see him again? Do we get to see the Lifetime movie? I'm interested. I want to see this double mannequins. It just sounds amazing to me, man.
Well, know? that was one of Logan's droll lines. He was like, sounds like a docudrama.
Hey, listen, Hulu, if you're listening, just come on, just shoot the movie with Dick as a mannequin. It'll be fun. It's an hour and a half. How long would it take? It's a fun little movie. They could improv it. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back very soon. Yes. With episode 5 of season 4 of Veronica Mars. Don't forget, you can catch us at dvrpodcast.com. Rate, subscribe, review. All right, everybody. Peace out.